It's the Gary Nall Show. And now, your host, Gary Nall.
Got my mojo working, but
hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to take on those people who believe that it was always better in the past. We're going to share a different perspective. I was listening last night to see how the different media, both on the left and the right, and the so-called independent media were covering the latest controversy surrounding Hillary Clinton. And I heard several people talk about the problem is liberal, or the problem is left, or the problem is progressive. And what we needed was to have more conservative values. Really? Which ones exactly are you referring to? We'll take that on. I want to share some of the thoughts of retired professor of philosophy and logic, John Causey, on that, and my own insights. Also today, we're going to deal with the environment in a little greater depth. We're going to talk about DuPont. We're going to talk about something that rarely gets attention. But George Monbiot from England is going to talk about applauding themselves to death, why the UN climate talks have wasted 23 years. I absolutely agree. I've said this many times, that these conferences where everyone goes and it's a feel-good event and you have some indigenous people coming forward and they talk about their plight, whether it's the islands in the middle of the Pacific that are being inundated with water, but nothing happens, not by governments. Also, so you thought it was big tobacco that was the master manipulator. What if I said that big tobacco was actually taking lessons from big sugar? That's right. From a group of researchers at the University of California, San Francisco, they looked at 319 internal sugar industry documents between 1959 and 1971. And that was a key time for public policy surrounding the problem of tooth decay. Their analysis, published in PLOS Medicine, which is a very respected medical journal, reveals what they say appears to be the origin of the Merchants of Doubt style of PR strategy. So it's sugar that was learning the lessons, and big tobacco also, but then big oil and big pharma have all taken on the same mantras. We'll explore that. Also today, in a newsmaker call to action, Louise Baucus will talk about a fight in the New Jersey Assembly and Senate with a bill that would remove vaccine exemption and mandate vaccines on all children. So we'll explore that. Also from the social issues, corporate fascism. What does it look like? A sanitation worker jailed for starting work too early in a wealthy suburb. True story. Also, the great middle class extinction. Quote, 95% of new homes are built for the rich or poor, but not the middle class. Time permitting, from the UN, the world is eating too much sugar. Also, some new findings on vitamin K2 to improve arterial function in healthy women. Also, lycopene, reducing tumor necrosis factor alpha, that can help you turn off, especially if you're diabetic, some of the inflammation in your kidneys. And a little more in-depth on bioflavonoids creating healthier skin. Plus, Naomi Klein giving an answer about the media and fake stories. But in following that, a person who I believe has done more good and more honest reporting on important issues than anyone else in the media, Abby Martin. And I will give one example. It's only 2 minutes, 30 seconds long, about all of the media, left and right, bowing down to the lie. And you'll see what that lie is. So you see, we have a lot to share. Also, for those of you who are interested, I'm just going to start with some quotes from George Orwell. Now, people know about his two important works, but they frequently don't know some of the specific quotes that he's given. He said, for example, "In a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act." He also offered, "The very concept of objective truth is fading out of the world. Lies will pass into history." In our age, there is no such thing as keeping out of politics. All issues are political issues, and politics itself is a mass of lies, evasions, folly, hatred, and schizophrenia. All the world propaganda, all the screaming and lies and hatred comes invariably from people who are not fighting. War against a foreign country only happens when the moneyed classes think they are going to profit from it. Journalism is printing what someone else does not want to print. Everything else is public relations. Threats to freedom of speech, writing, and action, though often trivial in isolation, are cumulative in their effect, and unless checked, lead to a general disrespect for the rights of citizens. And finally, if you want to picture the future, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever. Things to think about. The man clearly had an insight into the human condition. We begin with health and nutrition. When we consider most people are concerned about their skin, and the older they get, or when they start to pass from one stage of life, let's say where their skin was really nice and healthy looking and wasn't sunken, didn't have the sallow cheeks, didn't have the lines, then they suddenly start to see them and they freak out. What do you do? More often than not, we try to do something topically, instead of realizing that whatever's happening with the exterior part of your body, your skin, had its genesis with the acceptance of sunlight and toxins in the environment outside, coming in, meaning what we eat, what we breathe, what we drink. Now, according to Dr. Gary Goldfaden and Robert Goldfaden, there are about 4,000 naturally occurring plant metabolites called bioflavonoids. I've discussed these a lot because these are your vibrant color fruits and vegetables and flowers. And by the way, there are a lot of edible flowers too. Now what happens is they defend the skin against the damaging effects of stress, pollution, and age itself. Hence when we eat our blueberries, our pomegranates, cherries, red peppers, yellow peppers, purple peppers, all of those colors, the pigments in the fruits and vegetables, that's what really helps our skin. And these, as a group, are called bioflavonoids. Now, what a bioflavonoid does and why they're so important is they have the ability to neutralize reactive oxygen species by donating one of their electrons, thus stabilizing the molecule and breaking the oxidative chain. Vitamin C does the same thing, except at a greater level, and vitamin E does the same thing. Let's say that in your blood you have billions upon hundreds of billions of free radicals. If you do not have something to counterbalance that, to neutralize them, to make them harmless, a certain percentage of those are going to damage your cell. Once your cell is damaged, whether it's the epithelium, the lining of your arteries, you end up with lesions. You end up with blockages, and that ends up with heart attack or stroke, or calcification, what we call arterial sclerosis. So the more fruits and vegetables you eat, the more the juices you consume, the more the concentrates you take in from liquids to powders, the healthier your body is. It's that simple. Now, I'm not going to mention what all 4,000 do because we don't know. But we sure do know a lot based upon quercetin. That's my favorite. Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, quercetin. That's what you get when you eat the onion. And also we have what is called hesperidin, Hess, H-E-S, Para, P-E-R, I-D-I-N, and Rutin, R-U-T-I-N. Now, they all are great at preventing and reversing wrinkles, reducing the appearance of aging spots, and fighting spider veins, including not just on your face, but also on your ankles, where a lot of people have them. Look down. If you want to really tell the health of a person overall, especially their vascular health, look at their feet. Look at their ankles. What's the color of their toenails? Are they hard and pink and shiny? That's good. Are they ridged, cracked? Do they have discoloration? That's bad. Do they have little flecks in them? That's bad. Are there fungus under the nails? That's really bad. Then look at the lines. Are there little tiny splotches? That's not good. It's poor circulation. Do they have cramps in the calves? That could be intermittent claudication. And that's from doing too many hours of sitting, of not standing enough, not walking. That's why throughout the day we should always go for a walk. Even if you just walk, you know, up and down the aisle of the office where you live, or take a walk around the block, that walking is really important. But that won't reverse what you have. That will merely prevent much of what is coming after that. Let's take a look at quercetin. It's a bioflavonoid. We get it in onions, parsley, apples are very good in the skin, all the berries, really strong in grapefruit and red wine. And these quercetin molecules can trap, like vitamin C, they attach to a free radical and neutralize it. And that's why the more vitamin C you have in your blood, the more quercetin you have in the blood, the more the molecule can donate an electron that then neutralizes when it attaches to a free radical. Now, there's some like alpha-lipoic acid and vitamin E that are superstars. They can just keep donating and donating and donating and trapping and neutralizing more free radicals, which means you have less likelihood of having damage. And that's why for those people who are out in the sun, those people who may have drank or smoked earlier in their life, they're more susceptible to free radicals because they have oxidative damage in the eye. So that's why they have to, if you have any ocular pressure, if you have cataracts, glaucoma, you really have to focus upon things like red currant concentrate each day, because you can't find red currants and black currants and white currants. Currants are not easily found. You only generally find them in a gourmet store. I used to go clear down to Balducci's when it was downtown on, I think it was 6th Avenue around 8th Street, years and years ago, decades ago, because they had exotic fruit from around the world I couldn't get anywhere else. But those I could only get occasionally, like twice a year, and they don't last long, and they're very bitter. But boy, they're good for you. So, second best, you go to the health food store, and you look for organic black currant, red currant concentrate. The concentrate's always better than the juice, because they've taken out a lot of the water, so you're getting more of the nutrients. Hence, you're getting more of the quercetin. Now, when applied topically, quercetin has been shown to protect the skin's natural antioxidants from depletion caused by ultraviolet radiation, and it decreases oxidative damage caused by being out in the sun. But quercetin's real anti-aging power comes from its ability to extend the survival and viability of human skin cells. So when skin cells stop replicating, your skin loses elasticity and collagen, which results in wrinkles. And one study showed that when quercetin and rutin, which I mentioned earlier is another bioflavonoid, were applied to dying skin cells that had ceased to replicate, the skin cells were rejuvenated and began to reproduce again. And another interesting property of quercetin, its ability to increase the production of collagen. Now, I've mentioned many times that collagen is necessary to hold your skin up, to keep it tight. And this beneficial effect has made it increasingly popular ingredient in some skincare products. But I'm not really keen on the skincare products because you don't know what percentage of given nutrients in there. It may be just enough to make a label claim. So I'm always suggesting, first and foremost, eat the organic foods, drink the juices, and take the supplements. I do all that because I know that to keep the skin healthy, because I was out in the sun too much when I, in 1989, I went down to Texas and bought a ranch, the Healing Springs Ranch, which thousands of you visited. That was a wonderful experience. And I would only be there in the month of August. And that's when it's at its hottest. It could go 110, 115 degrees. I'd be out there training for all the races I was doing. And frequently without a shirt. Well, that was stupid. But I was taking massive amounts of vitamins, and hence you couldn't see anything topically. So I never got a burn. And it's the burn that turns into the tan where you're damaging your skin. But later, starting to realize that when you're exposed to any toxin, including excessive sunlight, you have created damage you cannot see. So you have to go deeper, meaning you have to assume, everyone in this audience should assume that you have precancerous lesions in your face, your hands, your back. And if you want to really get a freak out, if you want to have one of those come to Jesus moments, then go to a qualified dermatologist and have a white laser done. It's simple. It doesn't take long, not expensive. And you go in with nice looking skin and you come out and my God, it looks like someone painted your skin with a little red brush, because you have dozens, sometimes hundreds of these on your arms, your back. And you think, what is this? Well, it's simple. Those are the precancerous lesions under the skin that you did at some point in your life that could, not that they always would, but could become cancers, including squamous cell cancer, which is one of the most common, or more deadly, melanomas. So I work with a lot of people who've had skin cancers, and I highly recommend that you get these precancerous lesions removed. Now, what happens is, in effect, the laser is burning out that skin and the tissue around it and forcing the body to create new collagen, and which is good, but also it's helping to prevent the cancer in the future. So definitely consider that. But also, before you go out in the sun, take some vitamin C with quercetin. When you come back out from being in the sun, take vitamin C with quercetin. So you get the benefits of the sun, but you don't get the sunburn. It is the sunburn that ends up being the triggered reaction. Only a decade or so ago, anti-aging products concentrated primarily on reducing wrinkles and plumping up the skin to produce smoother, more youthful appearance. But that really doesn't work. But one thing that does work for helping the skin, aside from what I just mentioned, is the other antioxidant, the bioflavonoid hesperidin. It is a superstar. It's similar in structure to a compound that has long been considered the professional gold standard for the treatment of age spots and other hyperpigmentation disorders. You've seen it all. You look at someone's hands. You can almost always tell the age of a person by looking at the skin on their hands, because we never assume the skin on our hands is going to change until it does. And then you start getting those age spots. Well, hesperidin works by limiting the capacity of the skin cells to produce what is called tricinase, an enzyme responsible for producing the skin pigment melanin. However, unlike some drugs that are used, hesperidin does not come with a list of side effects. In fact, it's really good for the skin. So rejuvenate your spider veins, your varicose veins, the unsightly spots on your body, tighten up your skin, grow new healthy skin that's blemish-free and wrinkle-free. But you got to do it taking vitamin C. My suggestion is 6 times a day with different bioflavonoids. And therefore, you could save yourself a lot of damage. Also, lycopene, lyco, L-Y-C-O, P-E-N-E, is really good, especially if you have any kidney problems, because this article I read in Diabetes Week from Nutrition Study finding, quote, recently were reported by researchers that lycopene reduces tumor necrosis factor alpha on the kidneys. That means inflammation. Quite simply, when you take lycopene, you're helping your kidneys. And a good study from the journal Postgraduate Medicine looked at the Physician's Health Study. Those are physicians, tens of thousands, that have been evaluated for about, I guess, 35 years now. And they found, quote, the purpose of this review is to closely evaluate evidence from randomized controlled trials in the last 20 years evaluating the effect of multivitamin mineral supplementation, either alone or in combination with other individual vitamin mineral supplements, on cancer risk, with a focus on results from the recent Physician's Health Study, end quote. The results were that cancer protective effects and benefits with multiple nutrient supplementation. So for those of you who've been taking your vitamins for a number of years, you're on the right side of truth, science, public health, and less likely to have cancer. So that is good. And finally, on health and nutrition, it's about sugar. Quote from the World Health Organization. New guidelines from the World Health Organization are enough to kill anyone sugar high. The UN Health Agency says the world is eating too much sugar and people should slash their intake to just 6 to 12 teaspoons a day, an amount that could be exceeded with a single can of soda. I would suggest you get rid of all processed sugars. Allow none. There are more than enough ways to sweeten things up with natural sweeteners, so you don't have to add that. Oh, and by the way, from Harvard Medical School, quote, the more fried food you eat, the greater your risk of heart failure. This study suggests that it might be wise to reduce the frequency and quantity of fried foods consumed in weekly in order to prevent heart failure and other chronic diseases, end quote. That was from Professor Luke Dezu, Professor of Medicine at Harvard Medical School. Well, I'm glad they did this, but you've known for a long time that fried foods were bad for you. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today from our environmental segment from Christina Sirich. DuPont poisoned water for 50 years. A federal lawsuit has been filed against the chemical company DuPont by residents of West Virginia after being poisoned with a chemical called C8. The plaintiffs seek damages from DuPont for contaminating their drinking water. DuPont has a habit of poisoning people, as many chemical companies do. The company has been sued hundreds of times for contamination, both of the environment and humankind. The chemical C8 is used to make the product Teflon, which can cause liver, prostate, and testicular cancer. DuPont was aware of this danger for a long time, but continued to use it in the manufacturing of products anyway. As early as the 1950s, DuPont knew just how dangerous C8 could be to human beings in the name of profit, while white-collar criminals decided to ignore the facts. DuPont dumped C8 chemicals into two local aquifers, whereupon West Virginia residents have been drinking the poisoned water for years. DuPont knew since the 1980s that the chemical water was causing birth defects and could have acted then, but still chose to do nothing. 3M, one company who was using Teflon, even told DuPont that they didn't want to use their product anymore due to the dangers it posed to public health. Most notable of the nonstick cookware dangers, chemical compounds, this particular compound is emitted when you cook. So DuPont continues to sell their cancer-causing chemical-laden Teflon to this day, end quote. So, for all the people who lived up and down that area around Parkersburg, because DuPont was only a few miles from my hometown, and the air stunk constantly because of that. Now, want to take a look at an issue that rarely gets much attention, and that comes from the environment. I have a very optimistic feeling about those individuals and groups and communities who are conscious of their impact upon the environment, individually and collectively, and make their choices consciously. I am not optimistic for those who are indifferent or disdainful, that don't believe that what they do with their throwaway items, their plastic bags, they don't care about how much utilities they use, they don't care about solar or wind, they don't care whether their food is GMO'd, they just are indifferent. That is certainly their right. But I'm not optimistic about their future. I am absolutely not optimistic about anything the UN is doing about climate talks, because I see it differently. I see a group of individuals who are all well-intentioned coming together to share their concerns with a group that is not going to help anyone, and countries that will only do this and send representatives to show that they have political deniability. Of course we're interested in global warming. We just had such and such at the conference. But what did you do with Koch Industries? What did you do with big coal and big oil and nuclear? Well, we've done nothing. You were looking over here at what we were saying that we were interested in. You weren't looking at our actions. And that's the nature of society. Hence, this is what George Monbiot has to say. If you visit the website of the UN body that oversees the world's climate negotiations, you will find dozens of pictures taken across 20 years of people clapping. These photos should be of interest to anthropologists and psychologists, for they show hundreds of intelligent, educated, well-paid, and elegantly dressed people wasting their lives. The celebratory nature of the images testifies to the world of make-believe these people inhabit. They are surrounded by objectives, principles, commitments, instruments, and protocols which create a reassuring phantasm of progress while the ship on which they travel slowly flounders. Leafing through those photographs, I imagine I can almost hear what the delegates are saying through their expensive dentistry. "Darling, you've rearranged the deck chairs beautifully. It's breathtaking. We'll have to invent a mechanism for holding them in place as the deck has developed a bit of a tilt, but we'll do that at the next conference." This process is futile because they have addressed the problem only from one end, and it happens to be the wrong end. They have sought to prevent climate breakdown by limiting the amount of greenhouse gases they are released. In other words, by constraining the consumption of fossil fuels. But throughout the last 23 years, the world's governments decided to begin the process. The delegates have uttered not one coherent word about constraining production. Compare this to any other treaty-making process. Imagine, for example, that the Biological Weapons Convention made no attempt to restrain the production or possession of weaponized smallpox and anthrax, but only to prohibit their use. How effective do you reckon it would be? Imagine trying to protect elephants and rhinos only by banning the purchase of their tusks and horns without limiting killing, exporting, or sale. Imagine trying to bring slavery to an end not by stopping the transatlantic trade, but by seeking only to discourage people from buying slaves once they have arrived in the Americas. If you want to discourage a harmful trade, you must address it at both ends, the production and consumption of the two. Production is the most important. The extraction of fossil fuels is a hard fact. The rules governments have developed to prevent their use are weak, inconsistent, and negligible. In other words, when coal, oil, and gas are produced, they will be used. Continued production will overwhelm attempts to restrict consumption. Even if efforts to restrict consumption temporarily succeed, they are likely to be self-defeating. A reduction in demand, when supply is unconstrained, lowers the price, favoring carbon-intense industries. You can search through the UN's website for any recognition of this issue, but you will be wasting your time. In its gushing catalog of self-congratulations at Cairo, Doha, Bali, Copenhagen, Cancun, Darbin, Lima, and all the other stops en route, the phrase fossil fuel does not occur once. Nor do the words coal or oil. But gas, oh yes, there are plenty of mentions of gas. Not natural gas, of course, but a greenhouse gas is the sole topic of official interest. The closest any of the 20 international conferences convened so far have come to acknowledging the problem is in the resolution adopted in Lima in December last year. It pledged cooperation in the phasing down of high carbon investments and fossil fuel subsidies, but proposed no budget, no timetable, no instrument, no mechanism to make it happen. Well, and that's what it is. There's nothing random about the pattern of silence that surrounds our lives. Silences occur where powerful interests are at risk of exposure. They protect those interests from democratic scrutiny. I'm not suggesting the negotiators decided not to talk about fossil fuels or signed a common accord to waste their lives. Far from it. They've gone to great lengths to invest their efforts with the appearance of meaning and purpose. Creating a silence requires only an instinct for avoiding conflict. It is a conditioned and unconscious reflex, part of the package of social skills that secures our survival. Don't name the devil for fear you'll summon him. George Monbiot. I'm Gary Null. We're going to take a brief break and come right back into Naomi Klein discussing how stories are made up and sold to the public. You'll find it of interest. Not Naomi Klein, Naomi Wolf. And by the way, for those who have tuned in at different times and could not get on the air, we had a temporary outage because of sabotage. We're back up and functioning, and we even brought in a special team of IT experts to create encryption and safety and redundancy so it would make it much more difficult to happen in the future. It's happened twice in the last 12 months, always immediately following something that was relevant that was going out. And just to double down on this issue, it was on vaccines. So what we've done is, as of today, we have over 35 articles, original, in-depth, scholarly articles on the dangers, lack of science and efficacy of vaccine. I posted on my Facebook page and are posted also on PRN's main page. Read them. And then see what the truth is when it comes to these questions of vaccines. So that we're doing. Also, we are compiling and reviewing the best documentaries ever made on the subject of vaccines. There are over 30. We're posting them free for you to watch. So you will be the educated consumers on these issues. Also, if for any reason you need to listen to this program by telephone, let me give you the number to call. It is 712-432-7231. That's 712-432-7231. I believe I was the number is now over 16 million minutes. Yesterday we had, I think, close to 60,000 just yesterday. Also, I want to thank those people who came to our site yesterday. From England, 14,090. From Germany, 7,178. From Spain, 7,148. From Canada, 6,058. Mexico, 6,053. Australia, 6,050. India, 6,043. Japan, 5,380. And Chile, 5,360. That's only 10 countries out of 170 that are tuning in and or coming to the page to read any of the hundreds of articles published every 24 hours on progressive, socially relevant, environmental, and call to action themes. That's just yesterday. So, we are happy to be a part of the community of activists who are challenging authority. Now, let's listen to this challenge to authority.
Okay, I think he's got one.
Hey, on your number 10, where you're saying, oh, well, you know, the whole, you know, martial law, what do you think of what happened in Boston? When we were looking for a pressure cooker and two teenagers, you know, and then they took over the whole city and shut it down. And to me, that looked a whole lot like martial law.
Yeah. Oh, God, I can't believe. See, this is why I didn't want to give this talk, because I knew that we'd have this conversation. And now it's on the record. All right. Let me take a step back. We have to deal with it. Let me take a step back and a deep breath, because this is a very painful thing to talk about. All over the world, we know, it's well established, the State Department and intelligence agencies engage in theater, and it's what they do, it's spycraft, to create spectacles and events that people may not realize are spectacles and events, but that, well, like the overthrow of Mossadegh in the 50s in Iran. They'll funnel money to protesters, fly people in to infiltrate protesters, they'll create fake newspapers, and so on. So we know that this happens in countries around the world. I believe that a law has been passed in the United States, I think it's part of the Defense Authorization Act, I need to confirm this, that, pardon me, now makes it legal to propagandize American citizens. Do we know about that?
Sure.
Yeah, it's true. And is it in the NDAA or is it in something else? Do we know?
It's a separate bill.
It's a separate bill. And it's been passed. It's now law? Do we know what
2 years ago.
Do we know what the name of it is?
I don't remember, but I reported on it.
Oh, thank you. Will you send me the link?
Yes.
Thank you. So what this means is, and I, you know, as a journalist to say these words, just I can't tell you with what a heavy heart I say them, but we've entered an era in which it is not crazy to assess news events to see if they're real or not real. And in the United States as well as overseas. And in fact, it's kind of crazy not to. Now, you know, there's so much hype about what I just said, and so I want to be very clear about it so it can't be taken out of context. You know, there's... pardon me, this kind of reflexive vilification of anyone speculating about that because they become a conspiracy theorist, right? Well, just bear with me. You know, I've often thought about this because our intelligence agencies, and for I respect spies. I mean, you know, who are doing, like before it got out of control, I believe we need intelligence. I believe we need intelligence agencies. I don't think there's anything dishonorable about being in the intelligence services if you obey the Constitution and the law. But all over the world, our intelligence services are engaged in conspiring to create outcomes. That's their job. That's how they're successful. So now that it's legal to propagandize in the United States, it doesn't surprise me that there's more and more products coming up in popular culture, more and more events in the news stream that seem to be, to my eye, to be subsidized. Let me give you some examples of that. I'm not talking about Boston right now. I'll get to that. We also talked earlier about infiltrators, right? And how they provoke violence. This is well established. So if we know that infiltrators by the police, NYPD, they've been documented, or other police forces, dress up like people they're not and provoke violence, why is it unthinkable that there might be spectacles that might drive an outcome in the news stream? Let me give you a couple of quick examples. And all I'm saying is we, unfortunately, and I have to say this to my fellow journalists as well, we've entered a time in which we need to be very skeptical about the news stream and look at it critically and ask for more verification and more inquiry. And that's just being good reporters. And it makes it like this. There's spectacle fed into the news media in China. There's spectacle fed into, like, Chile. How did Pinochet, you know, engage in his coup? He created photographs of a cache of weapons that the terrorists had, you know, hidden. Was it real? Was it not? Most historians think it wasn't. I mean, this is, like, not unusual. you know, in the process of creating a closed society. So if laws have made it legal to assassinate American citizens and legal to propagandize them, why should it be crazy or weird to think that that might be for a reason, right? All right. I saw the movie Zero Dark Thirty. Thank you very much. And I have worked on two presidential campaigns, so I recognize political talking points. And I wrote a piece saying, this reads like the Pentagon signed off on the script. Because there were like chunks of political talking points identifiable to anyone who's worked in Washington, right? And you don't come up with those if you're a writer writing a screenplay. And everyone was very upset. It was very controversial and scandalous. But in fact, belatedly, a news story came out saying that in fact the Pentagon had, I think, subsidized some of it, but had certainly consulted directly on the script. And I see more and more TV shows about the CIA and more TV shows about spies and gigantic blockbusters in which surveillance is normalized and gigantic blockbusters in which people are tortured to get them to talk in a way that might exonerate people who actually tortured people to get them to talk in Guantanamo. And there's all this money being pumped into these unaccountable, you know, terrorism fighting things. And now there's no law preventing that money from going through front organizations right into popular culture. So that's of interest to me. And so another thing I want to say, and there's so many people waiting to ask a question, but I just need to say this, is I'm skeptical of certain news events that seem more theatrical than the norm, or I want to ask questions about them, because I was in CNN once recently, and they were reporting a story about a water skier who had been decapitated on a lake between Mexico and the United States, and it had something to do with a terrorism threat, right? And I was like, decapitated water skier. Sometimes you hear these things and it's like so novelistic. You're like, real life doesn't work that way. Like, these are so novelistic. Someone's coming up with it to make it stick in the popular imagination. Or it just makes you think, well, I'd like to document that. I'm a reporter. What's the source? And it kept being just this one guy, Judge Arpajo in Texas. I may be mispronouncing his name. He's a very, he was the source. And I have this wonderful Facebook community all over the world. And I went on Facebook and I'm like, Mexican Facebook community, is there any reporting about a beheaded water skier in this lake, in this place in Mexico? And they're like, no, what are you talking about? There's nothing like that. Doesn't exist. So I turned to the CNN producer and said, do you have a second source for this story? And it was all over the news, And they're like, and they checked and it's like, nope, just this guy, judge, whatever. And I'm like, well, can you find a second source? And they were blushing and embarrassed and they looked and they confessed that they didn't have a second source, which if you know what journalism is, you're supposed to confirm it with two sources. So ever since that experience, CNN is running with this. No one's verifying it. Journalists aren't in a position to follow up on anything anymore because budgets are slashed and there's no investigative reporting. All this nonsense can enter the media stream for purposes that have to do with advancing agendas because no one's checking. That's all I want to say about that. Can I take more questions? I guess my feeling...
That was Naomi Wolf. But now let's make it specific. She gave us the idea that we can have misinformation, we can have agendas, we can have stories that are really meant to, for example, attack the anti-vaccine group, even if they're pro-vaccine but anti-unsafe vaccines. You have no right in our society today, according to the official position, to challenge anything unless you're the expert. And if you are an expert, and there are hundreds of scientists and physicians who are now challenging the safety and efficacy of individual or collective vaccines, they have been excluded, marginalized. But you don't hear their stories. Instead, you hear only from one side. But the best example of this that I could possibly give today, if this was the 1960s and 70s, I would use apartheid in South Africa, how the American media was not covering it and showing the companies in America that were doing business, in Israel doing business with the apartheid regime in South Africa. But today, I would use the conflict in Israel, between Israelis and Palestinians, and how biased it is, how one-sided it is, and how the American media has gone overboard not to show any semblance of objectivity, only reporting what they're told. Now let's hear from someone who, in my opinion, is out there ahead of everyone else in doing this kind of reporting.
During the latest siege on Gaza, Western media coverage has been downright shameful. Take a look at a couple headlines from this morning. 3 days into the Israeli military offensive dubbed Operation Protective Shield. First, Fox News says Gaza rockets aimed at Israel. What would you do with just 15 seconds? Wow. Then, so-called liberal alt-news site Vox declared the tragedy never ends. Palestinian rockets force Israeli peace conference to evacuate. Moving on to Human Rights Watch, an organization that's supposed to be unbiased of its criticism of atrocities, even it leads with indiscriminate Palestinian rocket attacks. While misleading headlines framing the violence as one-sided is dangerous enough, nothing compares to the blatant misdirection displayed by ABC's Diane Sawyer last night.
We take you overseas now to the rockets raining down on Israel today as Israel tried to shoot them out of the sky. All part of the tinderbox, Israelis and Palestinians. And here an Israeli family trying to salvage what they can. One woman standing speechless among the ruins.
See, the only problem with this broadcast was that the photos Sawyer showed of bombed out buildings and Israeli families trying to salvage the remnants of their homes were actually Palestinians in Gaza City. Now, thankfully, there's been so much outrage over this egregious mistake that ABC has already issued an apology online and claims that it will make another one on air. But how many people will see the correction? How many watching that report saw those horrifying images and thought, wow, look at how much damage Hamas rockets are doing? See, photos of Israeli homes being destroyed in a similar fashion simply don't exist. Whatever damage is done by rockets pales in comparison to Israel's aerial bombings. Yes, we all make mistakes. Goodness knows I've made plenty on this show. But this is not just a common or excusable mishap. As journalist Rania Kalik explains, Sawyer's bald misreporting reflects either a deliberate lie by ABC News or willful ignorance so severe that Palestinian death and misery is invisible even when it's staring ABC producers square in the face. Death and misery, which, by the way, now amounts to at least 90 Palestinian deaths, according to the Gaza Health Ministry, and over 339 injured at the time of this broadcast, while two Israelis have been injured as a result of the rockets. But you won't hear this disproportionality reported in the Western press, because Palestinian deaths are just another inconvenient truth.
And that was Abby Martin, RTV. Now, consider this. Have any of you gone to my website to look at the photographs of the 100,000 Palestinian civilians who are not the warriors, who have no place to live, and looked at the 10,000 buildings and homes completely destroyed, annihilated, with nothing being done to rebuild them? We have forgotten about it. And that is what it means to be able to control the news, control the stories, control the body politic, control the talking points. That's what Naomi Wolf was discussing in that. And by the way, that was actually, if she was talking about that judge, it was actually the sheriff in Arizona, if it's the same name. But it was a completely wrong story, but it served a particular agenda. We only hear of weapons of mass destruction. We only hear of one side of an issue. It was Bertrand Russell who said, few people can be happy unless they hate some other person, nation, or creed. Boy, that sure shows where a lot of the mindset is in our own policymakers. Now let's go over and say hello to our newsmaker who is standing by. She is Louise Habakus in Red Bank, New Jersey. She is the executive director of Fearless Parent, grassroots community and online media organization dedicated to educating parents about holistic parenting and for raising their children. And also, she's concerned about the vaccines now being mandated, like the Gardasil vaccine or the human papillomavirus vaccines in New Jersey. Nice to have you with us today.
Hello, Gary. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
And by the way, so people understand, I believe that behind all this is first and foremost the pharmaceutical industry, but they can't show themselves. So they send forth the ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, that for over 35 years has caused more than 20,000 bills to become laws in states. Their hand was hidden until 3 years ago. No one had even heard of the organization, representing over 300 major corporations, including Big Pharma, and also the lobbyists. And now they have a whole battalion of doctors and scientists coming forth, all with conflicts of interest, and saying that we need these vaccines, they'll prevent these cancers or diseases, and if you're not vaccinated, you're responsible. Even mandating, the suggestion is that if you're not willing to get your kid vaccinated, that you're an unfit parent, and your kid should be taken away and put in foster care. And right now, as I speak, we have 110 bills in 36 states wanting compulsory forced vaccination. These are vaccination bills. They'll start with Gardasil and go to others. And yet there has been no major national effort to look into this. There's no investigative journalism. And the only talking points I ever hear are those from the mainstream media. And clearly these have come from public relations firms. So, Louise, the vaccine bills in the New Jersey Senate and Assembly look dire and will remove exemptions. That means all exempted kids will need to catch up to attend school and hence get many vaccines at once. And I'd like for you to go through this and why this is really a bad idea. And these are New Jersey Senate Bill 1147 and New Jersey Assembly Bill A1931. Take us through this, please.
Yes, Gary. First, I want to clarify, these bills do not remove the religious exemption, but what they do is they severely gut the bills. And their explicit goal is to make it harder for families to request and receive a religious exemption to mandatory vaccines for daycare and school. The only non-medical exemptions in New Jersey are religious exemptions. There are 9,000 families, about 1.7% of students, currently receiving a religious exemption. New Jersey has the highest mandates of any state in the country when it comes to required vaccines, and we have among the highest compliance in the country. 95.3% of students are vaccinated. We also, by the way, Gary, have the second highest autism rate among the highest rate of learning disabilities in the country. The only state that's higher than us in autism is Utah, and obviously not as populous as New Jersey. So, as we know, New Jersey is U.S. or worldwide headquarters for over half of the world's pharmaceutical firms. You are hard-pressed to find legislators that are not being supported by pharma. In fact, if you go to the Merck website and you look at the documents that they themselves, the company, discloses showing which legislators they have donated to, you will see that among them are the sponsors of these two bills, Herb Conaway, Loretta Weinberg, and Joe Vitale. So what we have is, as you said, people are being misled. They think it's about the public health, but they don't understand that government is in the process right before our eyes, and with our permission, if we allow this to happen, they are eroding our rights and promoting increased intrusion by government bureaucrats into our private religious, parental, and medical affairs. These bills are discriminatory, dangerous, expensive, and Gary, they won't work. I mean, it's just, they absolutely will not work. They are targeting and persecuting religious parents. And, I mean, if your beliefs are violated, if your religious beliefs are violated by vaccination, and a religious family submits an exemption and they're denied, these families aren't going to go vaccinate their children, Gary. You know, so what you have happening is that there's a situation where they will actually either leave the country or the state anyway, and you're going to be hard-pressed to find a state where you can go to, right? You mentioned how many states have comparable bills. So either you're going to have to leave the state and keep moving as these laws change, or they're going to drive this underground. So let me paint for you what our legislature in New Jersey wants to do. These two bills right now are not companion bills, but you can be sure that they're going to be doing backroom sort of edits in order to sync them up so that they are companion bills that can go to the governor's desk for signature. So Senate Bill 1147 is the most onerous. What it states is that parents have to have a sworn statement that is notarized saying that their religious beliefs are bona fide and sincere, that they have been continuously held, that they are unrelated to any political, sociological, philosophical, or moral views, or unrelated to any issues of vaccine safety or efficacy. And then they are asking parents to take their private religious beliefs and have them signed off by a licensed physician. Now, I don't choose my doctor because of his or her religious beliefs. My religious beliefs are none of his or her business, and their religious beliefs are none of my business. I absolutely am incredibly offended by this bill.
What can we do? We're out of time. What can we do?
So what you need to do, New Jersey needs to go to Trenton on Monday at 10 a.m., and they need to testify. And at a minimum, what they need to do is show up and express opposition. If you can't be in Trenton on Monday, then what you need to do is call and fax. Don't email. Emails don't have to be logged. Calls and faxes have to be logged. So, you know, what I would say is go to njvaccinationchoice.org. I'll be posting information also on fearlessparent.org. If you can go to Trenton, it's in the committee room 11 on the fourth floor of the State House Annex. If you have any problems, email NJAICV. That stands for New Jersey Alliance for Informed Consent and Vaccination. NJAICV, V as in Victor, at AOL.com. Gary, this is crunch time. It's time for everybody to stand up on this. If we lose and you're denied a religious exemption, you're going to have to catch your kids up on all the shots that they haven't gotten.
Louise, I'm sure the members of this audience from New Jersey will be there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I'm Gary Null. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.